Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 165. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Ken Phillips. What is up, good sir?
Hey, man. Happy to be recording again. It's been a bit of a crazy week here. We were just talking about a little bit before the call, on the call before the show started, with kind of the bizarre weather, with the kind of torrential floods we had earlier in the week, and then mysteriously dried up and was super sunny over the weekend. So actually, that was I'll take that weather, to be honest with you.
Yeah, really, I'm good when the heat is dialed down a little bit lower than it was the past couple of days. And honestly, I'm even planning an early mow tomorrow to avoid the heat. Like, that's one thing. When we went to Hawaii, I kind of learned that people were smart and took, like, the middle of the day off, especially if they had an outdoor job. Because people are like, oh, no, I'm not working in that heat. I'm going to go out at, like, 5 in the morning to go get this work done. So that it's not roasting hot. And then I'll come back and take a break. And then maybe I'll work again later when things cool off. And I'm like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
At a certain point, that's what you have to end up doing, I think. I mean, there's like a certain like level of heat that you really just can't even be working in anymore. So, yeah, you got to find those cooler hours of the day to do stuff. I've been getting out and doing a little jogging. So in the mornings, that's usually a good time for me. Can avoid some of the heat of the day. That worked out today. But we were hanging out in the backyard on, I guess it was Sunday night. I had a movie projecting on a screen, and it was a little bit to the point where it was kind of too hot. Like, you're sitting outside and it's dark, but it was still hot enough that I was just like kind of still sweating a little bit while I'm sitting there. It took like, you know, a little while after, but the sun actually went down for it to feel like things were cooling off a little bit. So yeah, it was pretty hot weather this weekend.
Yeah.
I also wanted to mention the movie that we watched was Jaws, the original. And I gotta say, it still holds up, you know. But that was 1975, that movie came out. Uh-huh. And it's maybe a little slow, you know, but I still think it holds up. And, you know, my daughter Kennedy watched the whole thing. She was a little, you know, practiced, you know, cool, like, oh, nothing's going to, this is fine. I don't care. This isn't going to be too scary for me. But then by the end, she came over to me and her mom, when it was kind of snuggling up with her mom to get some safety. So it still works.
Yeah, still got a little punch in there for even the youngins. That is good to hear. I will admit that during quarantine, there has been a lot of looking back at some of the greats and some of the not so greats. When we changed TV providers in the middle of this thing, we got this station that replays Knight Rider all the time. And like, I remember you and I during one of the NFL drafts, we watched the Knight Rider that had the, and I can't remember what his name was, and I've looked it up a couple of times recently. It was the evil Michael Knight. And it was David Hasselhoff playing his own evil twin brother, and he had a soul patch, which is fantastic.
I was gonna say I didn't think he had a full goatee, but yeah, it was some kind of facial hair. Soul patch, okay. Yeah, I remember the evil version of Kit was Carr, K-A-R-R, in contrast to K-I-T-T for Kit.
Oh.
But I do not recall, Michael Knight's kind of evil counterpart. That's pretty funny, though. I mean, that was a real trope there. in the TV shows to have the evil counterpart, especially, oh, you know, bonus points for the evil counterpart with the goatee. but apparently it wasn't kind of to the point where it was like a cliche, I guess, when Knight Rider came out. I know that...
It did not... you know, maybe it was just our age that we did not think it was cliche at that point. I'm not completely, you know, completely sure. I mean, TV was still, I guess, even at that point, a relatively young medium.
To be honest, you can get away with a lot more cliches on kids' television programming, I'd say. kids aren't... They haven't been around enough to see these cliches before, so it's all new, you know, to kids. So they're more forgiving or that kind of thing, for sure.
So yeah,
I'll just say which way that broke out there.
Yeah, it has been unfortunate that I have not seen the evil Michael Knight episodes in my rewatches.
So how would you say that Knight Rider has held up in your rewatching?
Oh, it's glorious. Like, I'm like, oh, this is why I like bad, cheesy bullshit. Like, it's because I grew up on Knight Rider. Like, I blame you, Knight Rider. You started a formula that I still watch today. Because, yeah, like, like you said, like, it's all... I forgot how many moving parts there were in Knight Rider. Because I forgot that both of the women... Well, A, that it was two women that were working on the car all the time was interesting to me. Or at least some of the times.
Working at the same time? Or did, like, one take over for the other at some point?
I don't remember, like, I haven't paid that much attention. The episode that I really saw them featured on, it was both of them.
Okay.
Well, and I've got to admit that I still don't see them that frequently. Because there's been a lot of that, a lot of Chips. With Eric Estrada and the other guy. I don't even remember the other guy's name.
No, I don't know. Maybe he may not remember. I'm not sure. Usually people remember their names.
I just recently stumbled into like old episodes of Facts of Life. And I'm like, oh, I really don't remember what this show was about.
That's funny. We were watching Facts of Life a couple weeks ago, probably here. Wasn't the worst. Then we watched Charles in Charge. So yeah, we've been watching some old TV as well.
Yeah,
Charles in Charge was not too bad.
And one thing that they have definitely been doing is showing a lot of series on these TV shows. You know, I feel like I've definitely seen, Lord of the Rings as an option. I know that we have watched, some of the John Wicks. One that I actually feel like I haven't seen as much as I would have expected, maybe, or maybe it happened early on, was Star Wars.
Yeah.
And...
I mean, this on the Disney Plus thing.
Oh, do they not have them on TV anywhere now?
I don't know. I mean...
I guess I just thought about that. I'm not sure if they pulled them from TV completely. Like, I don't know what their contract with any of these cable providers was. But I don't feel like I've seen it. And I've got to admit, like... There's something, and you linked to the article about it, but it's also something that I guess even as a Star Wars fan, maybe I know that I admit that I'm never that deep into any of these categories sometimes, and that people are always deeper than us. But the idea that The Empire Strikes Back was the best of the original trilogy is definitely something that still to me feels like a relatively new thing. Like, I don't remember personally debating which one was the best after, and why am I blanking on what the third one's called?
Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, Return of the Jedi. Because, I mean, I definitely... But, I mean, I also would say... Because, what, was that 81?
Jedi's 81. I knew it was in the 80s somewhere.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm looking it up real quick.
If the Empire was in 1980.
83.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, I definitely remember being young enough to be into the Ewoks at that point. But I also, I don't really recall there ever being a raging debate while we were, you know, more than likely playing Magic or Dungeons & Dragons or anything like that about what the best Star Wars movie was. So I guess since I started listening to, you know, I feel like the movie review podcast for me started with how did this get made and have kind of spun off to other ones from there. You definitely have gotten a consensus that Empire Strikes Back is the best. And the article that you linked to, because it is a BBC article, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
The guy is, of course, arguing that The Empire Strikes Back, which is considered the best, the second of the two original films, really set into motion some of the worst plot points of of Star Wars in general.
Yeah. For some reason, I actually do remember having, and maybe it was with our friend Sam, a conversation about which is the Star Wars movie. I remember somebody introducing me the idea that The Empire Strikes Back was the best of them, even back then.
Okay.
It was not one that I kind of naturally came to. But I think it was sometime in the 90s when this idea was introduced to me.
Okay.
Probably late 90s, mid to late 90s, I suppose. And it kind of grew on me, I would say. So this article was definitely like, oh, okay, buddy, now you're going to come at me here with this contrarian hot take. And it was funny that the article did call out people who would think that this was just a contrarian hot take, but then they proceed to try to make a point as to why this could be the case.
This is definitely one where I would have liked a little more information from him. Like, the documentation to me of the problems is a little light. I do kind of agree. He points out that, first off, that IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes have this the highest rated of all the movies. And but some of the critics at the time did not like the movie. And there's parts of it that, you know, that it, to his argument, that don't make sense to me. His problem with the although wording that starts the movie off.
Oh yeah, I keyed in on this as well.
Because I guess there's a little bit of a flip side to that. Like, to me, they did accomplish something large, blowing up the Death Star at the end of A New Hope. But, this next movie's titled The Empire Strikes Back. So, obviously, the Empire had something bad happen to him. They're going to crack down. Like, so it's...
Oh, just to clarify here, I guess the opening crawl of The Empire Strikes Back says, although the Death Star has been destroyed, Imperial troops have driven rebel forces from their hidden base and pursued them across the galaxy. So his argument is that this is kind of basically undoing the first movie. And kind of making it meaningless that they destroyed that Death Star. Which I think at the time I can remember having a little bit of that feeling. Uh-huh. It was kind of like struck a memory for me reading this article. But I mean, at the same time, like, just because you destroy one weapon, like, say the U.S. has, like, some new great aircraft carrier we come out with, right? And, you know, somebody blows it up. Well, it's not like that would be the end, right? Uh-oh. I mean...
Yeah, it would be like one of those, oh, this sucks that this got sunk, but we have a lot of other ships that are ready to get blown up here. So, you know, yeah, you expect some type of casualty rate, even if your best weapons go down.
Yeah, I mean, that's surely a setback, but
right.
I didn't think it would be the end of everything.
And yeah, and that's definitely, like, I don't buy that part of his argument, but there were definitely other parts to me that were a little more persuasive, and that.
What did you think about the different kind of scenes that happen in both? He complains that Empire Strikes Back reuses a lot of the same scenes from Star Wars, the original. Such as Luke Skywalker being knocked unconscious by a wilderness alien. I guess that would be the sand people. Was he knocked out by the sand person people in the first one, maybe? And then that kind of abominable snowman creature.
Oh, yeah. The Wampa. Is that Wampa?
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's right. Or is the Wampa what they're riding on?
No, that's a Tauntauns.
You got me. Might be, deeper into Star Wars than you're letting on here, Kevin.
It's possible. But I guess I still haven't had, and maybe it's just because sometimes I don't care about which one's best in some ways. I just kind of enjoy the story. But I guess, and I'm trying to think of what the other, oh, well, and that was the other thing that, well, the one says, a rebel base on an ice planet to look like the plain white plastic corridors of Cloud City could have been salvaged from the studio bins, after a Star Trek film had wrapped.
Production value.
He feels like the production value is down, And I guess that's why I kind of bring up the rewatch thing. I know that I have put these movies on, even before, whether or not they got taken off TV or I just missed them on purpose. I'm not sure I've sat down for a good rewatch, like a real serious rewatch of any of these, either any of the original trilogy anytime recently, to like really dig into my own personal feelings on it. You know, and I guess that's something that, kind of reading this article, I'm like, oh, I guess I wouldn't mind doing that, because like, a lot of times when I do have movies like this on, I'm okay, like, going to do other, like, especially since they play them during the day, because they're doing, like, a whole, like, marathon of them. I just, like, throw them on while I'm cleaning, so I don't really pay attention. And I guess that's something that, like, I can't remember a detail like that. Like, maybe the sets do look terrible in the second movie. That's an argument that I'm not going to say is persuasive or not. Like, that to me falls under, I need to watch it again to tell you if the production value looks worse in the second one than it did in the first.
Right.
I mean, do you have any feeling for how those things look?
Because I haven't gone back and watched those for a long time either. And now that you're talking about more, you know, I was reading about, there's the despecialized edition, I think it's called, where somebody went through and like edited together a version of the movie from as high as res sources as possible. So it's like edited together from multiple sources, but they like put it back together the way it was basically at the original theatrical release.
Oh, okay.
Of Star Wars. Because one thing that I didn't even think about was, like, that movie won Oscars for, like, special effects and stuff. Oh. And, like, you can't actually watch those special effects anymore. Like, they've replaced them all with, like, updated stuff. So it's, like, it is kind of, you know, weird that it's essentially unavailable in any format.
It is quite possible. I know that I held on to my trilogy tapes, VHS tapes, that were the original, you know, I think they were just the, were they just the remastered versions, or the, because did they do a lightly touched up version before they started putting in animals? Did they just touch up some explosions in one version?
It's entirely possible. I haven't gone and like checked out every edition of all the movies or anything, but I know there's quite a few.
Yeah, because I mean that just it reminds me, because I'm trying to think of what happened, because it was when we were in college, because I remember seeing one of them when I was over in Italy, that came out. That they had remastered them and they were showing them in the theater again.
If you've ever tried to watch like a VCR tape on like a HD TV though, it's it can be a little you know,
jarring.
Not great, yeah.
Well, I mean, even I would assume that studios, even cheap ones, have a better budget than Stunt Granny does. And I see some of these old, because what was that? What's some of the other? Oh, Silver Spoons was another one that I watched recently. Like, that was definitely, well, I guess it didn't come from a, oh. I'm trying to. I'm just thinking of non-HD stuff. I'm not thinking of actual VHS.
For those old shows, though, it depends on if they were filmed on film or on tape. So, like, if they were filmed on film, they can, like, and they still have the original film, they can go back and rescan it to, like, a higher res. so it will look good in HD. Like, they'll be able to do an HD scan on it. But if it was filmed on tape, videotape, like, that is only, you know,
the res that it is.
I mean, I don't know, 480, like, instead of the 1080, it's only got 480 lines going up and down.
Oh, okay.
So that's, like, the highest you can get from it. With the film, it's, like, you know, optical film, so it's not, like, a digital set format or anything.
Gotcha.
They would have scanned it at 480 to broadcast it, but now they can scan it at, you know, higher res, 4K, whatever, and, you know.
Yeah, and then play.
It's going to look good.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, watching that video cassette then for me would be terrible, is what you're telling me, of the original. I think that I held on to the taste because I'm like, oh, these are either the unedited, or I feel like there was a version that was maybe lightly edited before they started adding in, like, you know, the extra Han Solo scene with Jabba the Hutt and things of that nature. I do feel like I have, you know, a set of VHS tapes with those somewhere in the house.
I remember when you got those and thinking that they made an announcement after that, you know, they would never make those original version of the movie available again. And I was thinking that the tapes that you had would be like kind of the most up-to-date release of the original kind of cut of the film.
Yeah, it almost makes me want to go look for them after we're done recording here.
But, I mean, so technically, since Disney owns it, they could change their mind. I mean, they're not beholden to George Lucas anymore.
Oh, would right.
Would they be able to release, like, a original cut of the movie? Do you think you could ever see that happening?
I would be pretty excited. I mean, I don't. It's one of those things that, like, people are so into variety these days, I don't understand why it hasn't happened at this point. You know, like, because I think people's expectations for viewing and listening are maybe down a little bit more because there's more of a variety of choices. And Star Wars fans would definitely get excited if you said, hey, we're going to release the original cut.
It seems like they should make it available on Disney Plus, where you know, how you can go in and, like, choose if you want to listen in Spanish or English. You can, like, go to a different menu and, like, you could choose, like, whichever, like, seven cuts of the movie you want to see.
Well, and that would be kind of crazy, too, just to see what all the cuts are. Because, I mean, you could really go bonkers and go with the, like, original director's cut from, like, whatever it was, 78 or 79 for the original one.
77, maybe?
77. Oh, yeah, it's every 3 years, so 77, 80, 83, then.
That makes sense. that would be pretty cool. I don't know if that would probably make George Lucas really pissed, so maybe they're holding back just because they don't want him to be, like, even though technically he's not involved with the product anymore.
Oh, right.
I feel like it would still cause problems if he was going to be just, like, blasting Disney up and down.
they're like, just going to wait till he...
with the fans.
They're just going to wait till he passes away and then do it. Then do it. So that they don't have to worry about exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's just... I don't know. It's, the whole thing about redoing your movies over and over again is pretty weird. But...
Oh, yeah, Because, I mean, I don't feel like there are that many other movies that have been touched up that way. You know, because, like, Peter Jackson hasn't gone back to Lord of the Rings. Like, I know that they came out with the director's cuts, but that was just, you know, that's just extra footage that they filmed during, you know, actual filming. Like, George Lucas added scenes, like, whole. Like, I know that he kind of had the idea for this, at least from what I remember, is that he had the ideas for the scenes, but he didn't think they were filmable. Especially, you know, a Jabba, kind of a, is sentient Jabba a good way to put it?
Sentient Jabba, bipedal Jabba.
Yeah, I don't know. Neither of these descriptions do it justice. Since he's a slug, he's kind of hard to be bipedal.
Yeah, but he's doing a good job of trying.
Trying to be, well, I guess a job of just being upright in general was a little bit of a chore.
Yeah.
Because...
And the scene where he steps over his tail, like when he's trying, he walked behind the actor because originally it was played by just a regular, Jabba the Hutt was just a regular actor.
Oh, right. But,
yeah, stepped, they made it so that he, like, they digitally shifted Han Solo, so he, like, went up and down over, and they made, like, Jabba the Hutt go, like, ooh, like, you get his tail stepped on. it was just too much.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't think I think I've seen that cut once, and I was just like, I can't watch this ever again. Like, I'm like, this is just terrible. Like, why is this happening?
So I'm interested in actually getting that original cut, downloading it from the internet somehow.
Oh.
And just giving that one a watch. Because it's really been a while since I've seen that, so.
Well, yeah, and then that would be pretty crazy, too. I guess I'd have to look up when I had those tapes, and that's probably about as long ago. Like, whenever I bought those was probably the last time I watched those, which, again, was probably in the early 90s there before the theater remakes hit.
And I believe if you own a copy of that version of the movie, then you could lay a claim to, you know, legally owning, downloading that version of the movie. So you're, since you would already own it.
Oh, right.
That's my understanding.
well, in a future OPA coming to you, a full breakdown. As if anyone needs one of the Star Wars saga.
This was a the other thing I think that they had a problem with was probably one of the things that I really liked about that movie was the whole like Darth Vader being Luke's father, like basically saying that this is just like a soap opera move. It doesn't really make. And, you know, claiming this is like where other things such as the villain is revealed to be Sherlock Holmes' sister or James Bond's childhood pal. So I don't know. It's an interesting take.
It's one of those ones, it's just like some of it is that's just how you continue a soap opera. Like, I mean, some of it I'm like, do you not understand how to extend a storyline, or are you just wanting something different to extend the storylines here? You know, because, yeah, there's just certain things that, yeah, they happen in a story. You know, like, things have to go bad, things have to go wrong, and sometimes people are related in these situations, I guess.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories about family.
You know, yeah, and I mean, I did think I'm kind of, and it's kind of funny because I might be a little more in agreeance with him on. It almost felt a little bit forced, especially when it came down to the whole third movie that Rey was the Emperor's granddaughter.
Oh, right. Full disclosure, I have not seen that last movie, although I have probably watched enough YouTube videos about that movie that I could legally be considered to have watched it. But yeah, it was like, I would say a common criticism of that movie is that it tries to steer away from the last movie and kind of like, you know, grab the wheel from the last director and kind of take a turn off the, you know, a different direction. And it was interesting to see the case made that that was kind of something that started in the very earliest days, you know, the second movie of Star Wars series, basically did that same thing according to this, this writer, you know, was an interesting formulation, I guess, one that I hadn't thought about, but I could see in some ways it reminds me that all these movies were kind of like made up on the fly, seemingly. I don't think George Lucas, when he made the first movie, was thinking about like this was actually step, you know, number four in a series of, you know, six movies that I'm making. You know, it was more like, oh my God, can I get this thing done?
Yeah. Especially in an era that was not particularly franchise heavy. You know,
oh, no, like, this would have been like the first one of those.
Yeah. Like, the summer blockbuster thing kind of started with these guys. So it's just like, yeah, I do think that, yeah, some of it is just not having enough forethought that you're going to have three of these movies. And that, like you said, you're kind of doing it a little bit on the fly. 3 years to kind of come up with a story that's coherent is pretty tough. You know,
it
like...
It seems a little...
Because what's his... You know, like, how long... I'm trying to think of how long it took Tolkien to come up and write Lord of the Rings. But it was a number of, you know, years.
Yeah, he took his sweet time. I mean, it was kind of like a, you know, a hobby for him, so, for a long time.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess you don't need to go that deep necessarily, but I also feel like, you know, Star Wars is one of those ones that I felt like they went deep enough with, even in the original movies, with a lot of these kind of alien cultures, that you kind of had something to dig into, you know? Like, there was something real there that a lot of shows didn't kind of go that deep into the culture stuff. Like, and not that they kind of went into Wookiee culture, but you kind of got an idea about Wookiees just through the way Chewbacca was, temperament-wise and everything. And I... You know, that's a lot to try to accomplish in 3 years, to kind of keep all those moving parts in place and going in a proper direction.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it would be easier. And, of course, this being like the first, basically first trilogy or major movie series, but today most of these are done by... filming them kind of multiple movies concurrently at the same time, I believe, Back to the Future may have been the first series to do that. Filming parts 2 and 3 basically at the same time or back to back. It allows you to kind of get things kind of out of the way without like tearing everything down and building everything back up again. You know, you kind of have the same people all together. You kind of stay in the same rhythm.
That definitely
that's also what they did
makes a lot of sense.
Later,
right? I did not realize that Back to the Future did that. Or maybe I don't remember that that was the case.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like one of the first ones, if not the first kind of major sequels to be done like that.
Yeah.
But I went back and watched. We recently rewatched that series, actually. Speaking of going back and watching older shows and movies, and it was a hit around the house. So that's another one that I think that held up. And for me, I think the third one actually has grown on me more over time. I remember not liking that one as much the first time through. It's definitely less of an action-packed one. It's more of like a... Most of it is like basically a straight Western. So it's different, but I ended up liking it. And I do like the action sequence at the end of that one with the train. Do you remember seeing that one, Kevin?
Yeah, that one I remember being pretty bad. That's another one that I feel like... I've heard some reviews of people telling me that it's not as bad as you remember or something like that. The third one. Because I remember it being kind of bad. It would be kind of interesting to watch that one back. I do feel like I've seen the original Back to the Future somewhat recently. And weirdly enough, I feel like I've seen the third one. That second one, I don't feel like I've seen on TV nearly as often.
That one's a pretty good one. It's action-packed, I'd say, for sure. And just like, I thought the parts where they were going back in time to the first movie, basically, was really cool. And still works for me. So, yeah, that's a fun one. Those are all three on Netflix, by the way, if anyone is curious.
And that was another one that I forgot to mention that we should bring up as a topic sometime. But Castlevania, especially since they had just released that season in March, I definitely think that that one is germane enough for the two of us slowpokes to add our 10 cents in on that series.
Yeah, have you been watching the third season of that?
Huh?
Have you been watching season 3?
Oh, I've been done for a while now.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, that was one of the easiest watches that I kind of stopped watching almost intentionally to make it last longer, because I was watching about 2 episodes. Like, I'm still not really a binger. I don't watch much more than 2 or 3 episodes of something at any one time, and I guess you can still consider that binging since it's multiple episodes, but I don't ever sit down and watch, like, bang out a season in a day or anything like that. And I watched about 2 episodes of Castlevania per night, though. Because that first season is really slow, because they have 4 episodes of, hey, we're putting the team together. And then once the team's together, you're like, oh, okay, this is going to work. And then the second season is one story, and the third season is another story, completely.
Yeah, the the secondary characters that they introduced in the second season, I think, really kind of sealed the deal for me and kind of made it more of like, oh, wow, okay, it's kind of an interesting show, actually. But the different Forgers, I think they're called.
Yes. Yeah, because there's
so,
the two Forgers.
So insanely complicated from the jump. It's like, it starts out with, like, Dracula falling in love with a woman and then, like, becoming human. And you're like, what the hell is going on? I thought, like, this was the bad guy.
Yeah, they make Dracula very sympathetic in this movie. Or in this series, I should say.
Within that same episode, he's like teleporting in pillars of fire and, you know, projecting himself to like the size of like three stories tall and like talking to people through an inferno. And it's just like, okay, like, I don't know what the rules of this world are. Like, this is like, you're just kind of dropped in here. But there's some wild shit going on. And then I'd say like that second season, they kind of like flesh out more of the, you start to get more of a feel for like, okay, what that world is like a little bit.
For sure. Yeah, you get the lay of the land a little bit better, and it's another one where they make Wallachia seem like it's the United States or something. There are like 50 states in Wallachia, and I feel like it's this like small region in Budapest. Or no, is it Romania? Yeah, it's Romania, isn't it? Generally,
so.
Where Wallachia is considered to be, yeah, like the fact that some of the vampires that are left after Dracula, they're like, I don't know if we have enough people to man our borders, and I'm just like, dude, like Wallachia is not that big. Like, how many people do you have in your army? Three? Like, can you even have an army if you can't cover, like, 50 square feet? Come on.
Yeah, you're right. Wallachia would not be as big as present-day Romania, you would think, because it's a region within there.
Yeah, but Wallachia is definitely much bigger than what we would constitute as it is the present day version thereof.
It's
a very rich show. Like, because you mentioned that it was based off of a newer version of Castlevania. Like, I haven't played Castlevania since the original Nintendo version.
Yeah, I would say it's like a maybe 90s version of the game. I think it was Nintendo 64 was the console it came out for.
Oh, okay.
There may have been more games in that kind of series or with those characters. I'm not sure.
Gotcha.
As I was reading a little bit into the Wikipedia article for Castlevania, apparently there's some games that are set in the future time. So like they've really gone all over the place with this Castlevania franchise.
Apparently. Oh, wow. Yeah, because I don't know if I guess you'd have to say that definitely feels like it's set in classic, you know, Dracula times, you know, the medieval time period.
Yeah, maybe the 14 or 1500s.
Yeah.
I think that the time period of the original Nintendo Castlevania was after this, the events of this series, when the Belmont family was kind of more established and respected again, I guess, if I'm understanding the timeline correctly.
Oh, okay. I did not realize that.
Yeah.
I did not realize the Belmont family had that much lore. I mean, they already kind of talked them up in the Castlevania show. I am not surprised that him and I'm assuming that him and the speaker, Trevor and the speaker, and I can't think of what her name is, end up having children.
Phyla or something? Is that? I don't know. It's something along those lines. That does seem possible to me. I'm not 100% sure on all those details, but yeah, somehow the bloodline does continue. It's canon.
Oh, okay.
However it happens. Did you know that the actor who plays Trevor Belmont is the same as Thorin Oakenshield from The Hobbit?
Oh, I was kind of wondering why the name was Richard Armitage.
Yes.
I was like, this name is ringing a bell to me, and I didn't really look it up. But that's why it is ringing a bell to me then.
Apparently a star of stage as well. And decided that the best way to get the good roles on stage was to become a movie star. At least that's the what I read in an interview.
Well, hey, there's no way to get an EGOT if you don't start on Broadway, sir.
That could be, yeah.
Gotta get that Tony wrapped up, and then move on to TV and movies.
Sadly, I don't think he won any Oscars for The Hobbit. I don't think he won any of those at all.
No, they didn't need to win any for The Hobbit either. I'm not blaming him for The Hobbit in any way, shape, or form, I must say. But,
I thought he did a good job in that movie. Like him and... I'm blanking on the guy who Martin Freeman who played
Bilbo
Baggins.
Yeah,
I thought he did a good job as well. But yeah, as a whole, speaking of 3 years not being a long time to put a movie together, I forget how long they had to put. Like Peter Jackson got basically tapped to come in at the 11th hour, like literally from was it Benicio del Toro.
Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah. He was originally going to be the director and kind of had like planned or had the time to plan. And then they brought Peter Jackson in kind of at last minute. And he really didn't have time to put something together. And maybe was a little burned out from doing Lord of the Rings stuff at that point because he had already spent years of his life doing it, so I don't know. Anyway, it just makes me sad to talk too much about The Hobbit. I don't know how we started doing this, but
it was the Castlevania rabbit hole that started the whole thing. Honestly, but yeah, that one's a little rough. The Hobbits. Well, you could put together a cut of that would be a great movie, but you'd have to combine all three movies that have actual Hobbit parts in it and then present it that way. Are we going to wait till Peter Jackson's dead to get that version too, I guess?
That could be a good idea. Yeah. You could cut out at least half the dwarf songs. You could make a decent movie.
Oh man,
there's just too many dwarves. Like I think, you know, the idea of 13 dwarves is kind of funny, and you don't have to think about it too much when it's in a book. But then when you actually like have to like try to treat them as actual characters in a movie, it's a little weird. I don't know.
The fact that there's all rhyming. Thing that pretty much goes with the whole situation, and that does not help matters at all. It again, that's another thing that alliteration sometimes looks good on the page, but it kind of confuses your brain when you're trying to learn their names. It is not as sing-songy as J.R.R. Tolkien thought it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny just to read the names, you know, but to actually, like, try to understand those names and, like, put them to actual people, I don't know. It's I don't think what was intended originally, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So, well, Kenneth, it could be time to talk about some Bell Time beers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, should we get a little bonus topic in here? Kevin, a little Pennsylvania controversy.
I think we could get along to a little Pennsylvania controversy. And one that I admittedly have paid very little attention to.
Right. I guess it's good news that what precipitated this event, of course, we're talking about Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger being able to, being recovered enough, I guess, from his arm surgery to be throwing legit NFL passes, in his own words, to his teammates. So that's good for him. Good for the Steelers, I would say, probably.
I feel like we've discussed before, and now that he's actually throwing passes and is really, I mean, there was still that weird subsection of people that are like, is Roethlisberger going to be back? Like, I think we finally dead and buried all of the, is he actually going to come back talk? He's definitely back, and literally all they need to do is have an average offense with how good their defense is, and things will be just fine. I'm not expecting a whole lot more out of Roethlisberger than that. Like, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, there's kind of a lot to be said for every NFL season's pretty crazy, but I think this one's going to be even crazier than some of the other ones, given the circumstances of training rookies for this coming season. We could see some weird goings-ons in the NFL this season. But,
well, yeah, I mean, yeah. We've seen a little bit of weird goings on in the lead up to the season so far this summer. Part of the story was Roethlisberger had made a deal with himself, I guess, to not shave his beard or get a haircut, was it? Until he's able to throw an NFL pass to his teammate.
That is correct.
Having that item checked off his list, he then proceeded to a local barbershop to get said trim done. Unfortunately, this was, I guess, during the time when those businesses were supposed to be closed because of the COVID-19 pandemic. The barber, I believe, said that he was actually just doing it as a favor for a friend, and he did not charge for the haircut. So, to me, that would kind of like put the controversy to rest a little bit.
I hope Benny tipped him if he wasn't getting charged for a beard trim and a haircut. Was there any word
would that violate
on
some kind of guideline there? I don't know. I guess it's like everybody probably wants to get their hair cut, so I can see why people might be a little upset that Ben Roethlisberger gets to go get his hair cut, but they don't.
I mean, some people had barbers for friends, some people don't. I guess I'm not surprised either way. I'm not surprised that Roethlisberger did this. I am not surprised that there was an uproar about it. I don't care either way, honestly. I would assume everything was on the up and up and they were trying to be protective of each other. There's only so much you can do. If you're trimming a beard, you've got to have the mouth area open. And you've definitely got to be within 6 foot. Because when I went in to finally get my haircut, I had the covering on, she had the covering on, and away things went, and there was no facial hair dealt with. I mean, I have no facial hair to deal with, so yeah, it's just one of those stories that to me, I didn't click on it because that's the kind of story I don't want to click on right now. Like, yeah, that's not the outrage that I'm ready to jump on, Ken. There are other outrages that I'm gonna move along to. This one is a mere blip on the radar, on the OPA radar.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to read that article for you and kind of take the hit for you then, and kind of get some more of the details out there. So yeah, that time.
What
No
is
time.
what is your beer of choice? You actually look like you have beer on this on that end this week.
I do. I just wanted to verify. Oh yeah, it's from Stone Brewing, the Tiki Escape IPA it's called. This I got a variety or Tiki Escape mixed pack, I guess it is. And I didn't realize that these were all like 7% plus beers, so they've been kicking my butt a little bit, but you know, that's all right. A little something different, I guess. I'm not sure if I'm getting the tikiness from it, but I have been drinking this one, and I forget what the other ones are called. Oh, Stone Scorpion Bowl IPA and the Tangerine Express IPA. So yeah, it's the Tangerine Express might be my favorite so far,
Oh, okay.
but
I feel like I've had that one in past years. And I do
okay.
feel like I remember enjoying that. My beer on this end, we did drive down to Rock Mill Brewing down in Lancaster, Ohio. They had some nice benches outdoors, appropriately spaced. That is how we spent part of our Memorial Day, but we also brought some beers back from Rock Mill, because we're still probably going to frequent the breweries a little bit less than we used to. Their Petite Saison. When I think Saison, I think of a beer like this, very mild. There is not a whole lot in the hop department. It has a little bit of sweetness to it. It has like almost a crispness that's to me maybe akin to those that like the hard seltzers. Maybe I think should try out some of the saisons. They might find them to me a little bit similar. So that Rock Mill Brewing brewery Petite Saison is my belt-on beer of choice today. So yeah, I'm at Frango 11. That's at Gozer 33. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on any of the podcast platforms because we are everywhere now. So please find us on Spotify if you'd like, Apple Podcasts if you'd like, Google Podcasts, if you'd like. Stitcher Premium, even, in fact. Or at least Stitcher. I don't think we're on Stitcher Premium. So anyway,
you don't have to pay for it.
there's a whole lot of platforms. So go find us, rate and review us, do all the good stuff, and have a good night, grandkids.
See you.